Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
We have important commentary from the President of the United States, and I'd like to read this verbatim. And then we'll discuss what it means. On foreign policy, you recall that the last administration, some, by the way, I'm not just talking about former President Trump, we have a whole, this is not your father's Republican Party by any stretch of the imagination. This is the MAGA Party, not a joke. Think about it. This is a party that's owned wholly by guys like the senator from Texas and others. I mean, really and truly, did you ever think we'd be in a circumstance where the Republican platform would be that, and they, inaudible, the guy, the head of the REC, the head of the Senate Campaign Committee in the United States Senate and Republican Party, put out a platform that even Republicans have walked away from, some of them. The far right has taken over that party, and it's not even conservative in the traditional sense of conservative. It's mean, it's ugly, it's the way. Look at what's happening down in Florida, inaudible. They're going after Mickey Mouse, inaudible. I mean, seriously, think about it. As my friend used to say, inaudible. Who would have thunk it? It's this sort of commentary that's led us to delve into the world of science and decide to try to analyze how to think about the Joe Biden speeches that we see on a daily basis. And for that reason, we've come up with the Joe Biden gaffe triangle of emotion, because there are three things that make you feel something as you watch a Joe Biden speech: funny, scary, and sad. You usually feel one or two or three of those emotions. And here, we see that this particular one has landed in the mostly sad, as he lost his train of thought several times, not particularly scary and not incredibly funny, mostly just sad. We will make sure to look at the gaffe triangle from time to time to make sure we understand where these sorts of comments are. And this is the kind of coverage you're not going to get from the mainstream media, by the way. We've got a lot more to talk about on that front, I will say. There's a lot breaking as we do the liberal media collapse.
Stu Does America.
BlazeTV.com/Stu is the place to go to, I don't know, I guess subscribe to Blaze TV. You don't know that by now? What's wrong with you? The promo code is Stu if you would like to save $10 off your subscription. If you'd like to pay full price, do not use that promo code. I don't know why you do that. Coach Joe Kennedy, we talked to him here on set just a couple weeks ago. His case goes to the Supreme Court. We'll talk about that today. We'll knock out another gaffe triangle of emotion for Joe Biden, because obviously if you want to plot each one of these on a map, you can't just do one per day. There's multiple gaffes per day. We'll get to that as well. But we start by doing the liberal media collapse. And I want to start with something that's not exactly the liberal media collapsing, but it is the end game when the media collapses. It makes things like this possible. It's the big breaking news today that, yes, it does seem like it's really going to happen. Elon Musk is going to be the owner of the Twitters. And look, I think this is a positive. I think this is a good thing. I'm happy about it. Elon, his offer to buy Twitter has been accepted. At least, you know, those are the initial reports. Now, there's a lot of hurdles that are going to have to go, we're going to have to clear before we get to the end of this process. It's just one of those things. It's never going to be easy. A merger is not going to be easy. If we had a free market economy, this would be done by next week. But we don't really have that. It takes a while for these big things to get done. But the price is something like $46 billion. If you remember, Elon Musk put in a bid of $54.20 because $4.20 is a pot joke. And he likes jokes about drugs. And so that's where we are. Elon Musk is the richest guy in the world. I mistakenly said on radio today, I said, Elon Musk, what is he worth? $180 billion? No, $280 billion. I missed by $100 billion. That's how rich this guy is. And, you know, his company, Tesla, is worth more than like the top nine car companies combined, which doesn't make any sense, really, when you consider they sell about 1% of cars overall. But it's pretty impressive. And he's been able to do this with multiple companies. Obviously, he was there. He had a crucial role early on in PayPal. He has his other companies, you know, the Boring Company, which drills tunnels. And I don't know, he's got the SpaceX. And look, the guy does a pretty good job here. People do forget that Elon Musk is not a founder of Tesla. He came in early on, and he was an early investor and advisor, but he actually wasn't a founder of Tesla. It was a couple of other guys who had that idea. And, you know, it's Elon's thing now, though, of course, and it's incredibly, incredibly successful. So now he's going to try to do that with another company, and that company, of course, is Twitter. Twitter, we've talked about this. We did a whole show. I think it was called Stu Does Twitter. If you want to go back in the archives, maybe we can dig that one up. Might be worth showing this again, because for the amount of impact Twitter has on the public debate in this country, it is completely outsized from the actual user base. I think it's only a couple hundred million people use it daily, which is totally out of line with, you know, Facebook and Instagram, which are in the billions. Far fewer people go on Twitter than do these other services. And importantly, when we talk about Twitter, largely people seem to consider the impact it has on politics. Obviously, the left has been obsessed with the impact of Donald Trump using it initially. I mean, eventually got him kicked off. And of course, the Russian influence and bots and all that other stuff that they got into. You know, but the amount of people who go to Twitter to actually digest politics on a daily basis, if you're there, you're in the minority. You're in the very, very slim minority. It's just not a lot of people who do that. Most people hate this world. You know, they don't want to be bothered with the problems of society, and they certainly don't want to be bothered with opinions that they don't already hold. No one wants to hear something that they believe might be wrong. So people avoid that stuff. Twitter is a good place for journalists to yell at each other. That is what it is. It's a tea party for journalists. And I don't mean a tea party like the Boston kind. I mean, everyone gets around a table with little fancy dancy cups with their pinkies up in the air and they drink some tea. That's kind of what Twitter is. And occasionally fights break out. You know, it's like a combination of the WWE and a tea party. This is something that journalists like. It makes them feel alive. You get on Twitter, you tweet something, somebody responds to you, especially some idiot who doesn't know what they're talking about. You get to slam them and throw them down in the toilet, and you feel good about yourself for an hour. This is the highlight of most journalists' lives, okay? Best possible thing that can happen to them. Hey, you get a chance where some guy who's worked a long shift and hasn't looked at news, and he says something incorrect about the news, and you get to go on there and just stamp on his head for 10 minutes because, you know, it's your job to be, not on Twitter, but to actually watch the news. And you get to crush some peon, and then you get to feel good about yourself and talk about it at your little parties with your other journalist friends. This is kind of how it goes. So the reason why that's important is not because it actually is important. It's important because the same people who influence mass media coverage in this country, in New York, in L.A., in D.C., they're on Twitter. It's their lives. And if it doesn't matter how miserable they are, if they want to live a life like that, you're going to have to live it too. You're going to have to be in the middle of all these dumb online debates too. That's the way this works. So Elon Musk tweeted this today, and Elon, you know, we've been giving him a lot of attention based on the idea that Elon Musk can improve Twitter when it comes to free speech. Obviously, a big thing for conservatives who get kicked off all the time. I mean, I remember Dave Rubin getting kicked off for talking about how the vaccines didn't wind up stopping transmission. He, you know, and wasn't talking about whether they worked as opposed to, making the severe disease go away. But as far as actually spreading the virus, as we saw, especially as we got into the Omicron era, you know, everyone seemed to just get it, right? He got suspended for that. And now it's kind of like, well, people talk about that on a daily basis. And when you decide that your job is to decipher on Twitter, the place where every conspiracy theory started and spreads, if it's your idea to try to stop that and get every fact right on Twitter, you realize you're never going to be able to do that. You're going to create a situation where your users are angry because you keep censoring them. And then on the other side of that, you have a situation where, you know, people don't even have a good experience. They don't even like what they're doing. They hate you and they hate the experience going on there. And of course, because they're journalists, they keep coming back, because I think that's part of journalism. It's, you know, it's people in the media just come back to get slapped in the face. It's a masochist sort of thing. Here's what Elon tweeted. He said, "I hope that even my worst critics remain on Twitter, because that is what free speech means." And that's true. You know, free speech is a big, important part of this. And it's the reason why I would say it's most important to the country, right? I will say, and Elon Musk has said this as well, this is the de facto public square. I hate that sort of terminology. I hate people using that terminology. The public square argument, the de facto public square argument, is almost always an argument for more legislation. There's behind that lies a scary, scary thing to me, which is more legislation to control speech. I don't like it. People on the right use it. People on the left use it. Whoever wants to control speech says, oh, it's a de facto public square. Therefore, we can do whatever we want. Well, you know, you can't. I don't think that's a good idea. And I don't think it's a good direction for conservatives to go in either. I just don't, you know, this never is going to work out in our favor. It never does. But I will say that it is where a lot of the conversation occurs. And it's important to have more free speech in that venue. People should not be censored there. You know, the biggest example of this is obviously Donald Trump. The man was the president of the United States, and he's not allowed to be on social networks. Like, I mean, it's completely absurd, completely absurd. You have people who are like committing genocide in Africa, and they're posting pictures of themselves with like heads, just severed heads, holding up, smiling at the camera, and Twitter's like, yeah, of course you can post that. You know, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. Donald Trump, it can't be on Twitter. Obviously ridiculous. You can judge what Donald Trump says on Twitter. And I'll say this. The best thing in the world that ever happened to Donald Trump as far as his political career going forward is being off Twitter the past 4 years or a couple years. Because if he has 4 years off of Twitter, you know, the media has no fuel. They have no fuel. People have forgotten. And, you know, and I'm not saying this audience as much, because this audience, generally speaking, liked Donald Trump. But like the people who didn't really like Donald Trump and were people who maybe went toward Biden last time and now don't like Biden because they've seen what a terrible job that he's been doing. The media's going to do everything they can to remind those people, hey, remember, you didn't like this guy last time. Hey, remember, you didn't like this guy last time. And, you know, Donald Trump has a way of rubbing some people the wrong way. And so if he tweets something, he's going to irritate that same sort of pushback that was lit up throughout his presidency. Him just being able to kind of sit back and choose his moments to speak out has been a blessing for Donald Trump, not a curse. So the typical, I mean, remember, the first person to call for this was Kamala Harris. So you had to know that him being banned from Twitter was not going to work out for the Democrats. Kamala Harris wanted it to happen. So this is all happening as far as, you know, Twitter goes. And the free speech part of this is interesting. Of course, the bigger part of this, I think, for Twitter in and of itself is that this is a company that has lost money most of the time. And Elon Musk is not going to take a company on like this that's going to wind up losing money. He's going to turn this into probably a cash machine. My guess is it's going to do very, very well. Now, Brian Stelter, and I want to get into more on Brian Stelter here in a moment and the CNN back and forth with CNN Plus, one of the biggest catastrophes we've ever seen in media history. But he also commented on Elon Musk and his ability to buy Twitter. Here's what he had to say.
Look, who knows? I think That's an example of a broader question for Twitter, which is, if you get invited to something where there are no rules, where there is total freedom for everybody, do you actually want to go to that party? Or are you going to decide to stay home? And that's a question for Twitter users. Some Twitter users might love the idea that there's going to be absolutely no moderation and no rules at all. Others might not want to be anywhere near that. Am I crazy, Matt?
Well, that's a very open-ended question, but this actually was covered in depth by the documentary It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, as they ran an experiment in this front and at their bar where they opened up all the rules, and then there became some really crazy behavior that they didn't like, and they wound up putting in new rules. A lot of times when you open up rules, people decide they want more rules. But that is at no point has Elon Musk suggested he's just going to let anything happen on Twitter. What people want is they don't want their lives threatened. They don't want harassment. They might not want, and you know, Twitter is the one social network that allows all sorts of stuff when you get into, you know, pornography and things of that nature. But like, they don't want things that ruin their experience or terrify their actual lives, right? What they want, they do want debate. You know, most people have absolutely, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm hanging out with the wrong people, but most of the people I talk to are just like, look, some idiot wants to post some conspiracy theory about whatever. I don't care. I just go past. I mean, everybody's got a relative who posts crazy conspiracy theories. So what? I mean, don't we learn to live with this? And they act as if, you know, because that information might not be completely true, or it might just be offensive to some, that sort of stuff should be clamped down on. And that's just a crazy way to look at these things. It's not what people went to Twitter for initially, and it's not what people want. You know, the left wants more regulation on Twitter because they want to control the conversation. The right wants more regulation on Twitter because they want more of this conversation to occur. But really, you know, more regulation is very rarely the answer, especially if you're the right. It never seems to work out for us. It really doesn't. The free market seems to do a pretty good job when it comes to conservative values, because when you see something like the Florida law, for example, people posted that law, and, you know, this, of course, public schools is a different issue from free markets, but when the free market of information was able to be put out there, people said, yeah, that law makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I agree with it. You know, where everybody was telling you the opposite. It was the worst thing that ever happened in human history. It was the Don't Say Gay bill. Oh, my gosh. It was the most terrible thing you've ever seen in your entire life. Well, we see the same thing happening with CNN Plus, where the free market has spoken on this particular venture. CNN Plus is a catastrophic failure, perhaps one of the biggest media failures of all time. And I want to take our time with this today because there is so much to talk about when it comes to CNN Plus, what we've seen with The Washington Post over the past couple of weeks. We'll get into all of that here in just a second. When Tika Tiwari first started talking about blockchain back in 2016, people called him crazy. He came on the air with us and people called him crazy. And then, you know, we saw Bitcoin go up to 19,000, 20,000. And then the bubble burst. And Tika Tiwari said, don't give up. You know, this is like a second chance at life here. You missed the first Bitcoin run. It was understandable. No one knew what it was. It popped up to 20,000. People said, wait a minute, this is a big deal. We should really look at this. And then the bubble popped. It got down to, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 in 2020. And people said, see, people like Tika Tiwari were crazy. They were crazy. Now we're at 40,000. 40,000. We've seen it as high as 69,000. This has been the type of explosive market that people didn't believe was even possible in the world today. But it has taken off in an incredible fashion. And, you know, you're still early on it. I have to say it. You know, a lot of the Bitcoin proponents will put on a chart the adoption of Bitcoin versus the adoption of the internet. And they're basically on the same pace. But we are in like 1994 internet time. You know, we are really, really early. You are still early on this if you look into cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. Do this. Check it out. Make sure you understand this world. You don't want to miss an opportunity like this. You can sign up for Tika Tiwari's Palm Beach letter right now at bigtreport.com. It's bigtreport.com. Get the information on these cryptocurrencies, maybe some altcoins you don't even know exist. Do your research and understand this stuff. It's bigtreport.com. I want to ask you one of the most difficult questions you've ever been asked in your entire life. And I want you to really ponder the answer to this because it's important and it's not something you can just, you know, come up with a snap answer on. I want you to really think about this. Was CNN Plus a failure? Or not? Was it a raging success? Have you thought about all the options? Have you gone back and forth and considered, was this maybe the biggest hit of all time? Have you even thought of that option? Maybe it was this bigger than, you know, the Marvel franchise? You probably haven't even considered that part of the equation. This is the question that one Brian Stelter wanted us to ask and think about a little bit here. And I want to get into his audio because this is so incredible. But the fact that this would be going on after the network had already been canceled is really remarkable, and it's happening on the network. So they did, it was almost like, if you're gonna throw off, well, you're gonna take a network and you're just gonna throw them off the air 3 weeks into their run, just take them off. This is like a slow death. They've allowed them to stay on for like another week and just have to continue to go out there and do their shows. Now this was the kind of the pinnacle of Brian Stelter's career. Stelter, who was, you know, a media reporter, rose up in the ranks, got eventually, you know, he started at something called TV Newser, and then it turned into, it was Media Bistro, and I think it was Mediaite for a while, and then he went to the New York Times, and then he got onto CNN, and he has this weekend show. But this was his chance to kind of be elevated to a daily, 5 days a week sort of show. He was one of the centerpieces of CNN Plus, really. And that didn't work out well, Was it bigger than the Marvel franchise? Here's Brian to ask.
Have you seen anything like this happen before in the media business?
No. I mean, no. And first of all, I think I'm making history right now. I've never been on a program talking about the demise of that program.
Well, we probably have more viewers now than ever before because there's so much curiosity. Let me try out a theory on you, Matt, which is it's too early to know if this product, if this service was a success or a failure. You got all the haters today saying this thing was a failure. I don't know if we can even ever assess that because it just simply didn't have enough time because of the management change in direction. And at the end of the day, if you buy something, if you buy a giant media company, you get to do whatever you want with it. But it does mean there's a lot of suffering for employees and, frankly, disappointment among subscribers as a result.
Yes, it's a huge, huge problem. The subscribers are just all of him. That subscriber was very, very upset about what happened there. It is a situation where Brian Stelter is... Look, he's in a tough spot, right? He's literally doing a show that has already been canceled. And so he's there trying to justify, I guess, his life, his existence on this network. And, you know, it's a convenient thing to kind of think of this as a situation where, he is canceled only because of a disagreement with management. This is sort of the fallback position for CNN Plus at this point. Well, you know, people have different ideas and, you know, they come in here and, you know, we have more viewers than ever before, even on the air for like a week. Well, maybe you do, but that's not a lot. And we obviously understand it's not a lot, or they would be continuing this ridiculous experiment. At no point did anyone have the right, the temerity, the absolutely insane view that this could work. No one could have possibly thought this. Supposedly, there was some consultant somewhere who said you can get something like 15 million people subscribing to CNN Plus, which is completely bonkers insane. No one even watches regular CNN. Why would people pay for this? It's just completely nuts. So I don't know where they came up with this idea, but I will say this. There is this idea coming in to see this era of CNN Plus with Discovery taking over. And there is a question as to whether this was a bad move for CNN Plus and Discovery in the way that they did this. And the argument from inside the media circles and the people that I've spoken to say basically, like, wait a minute. Okay, we get it. No one believes it was a success. And there's an easy answer to Brian Stelter's question. Everyone, including the people at CNN, understand it was a big-time failure. Yes, they would have liked to see it get a little bit more time to see if it could stretch its legs and maybe turn into a niche product. It's not impossible they could get eventually to this number that they claim, 150,000 subscribers. I don't think they would have ever gotten there, but maybe they could have if, you know, over multiple years. And if you put out programming that was cheap and maybe used it as a minor leagues kind of for CNN talent to kind of get stretch their legs instead of investing, you know, $1 billion, invest maybe $5 million a year. You know what I mean? And maybe you can make 10. I don't know. I mean, that doesn't seem possible with CNN, but it's not completely implausible as a small niche product. Of course, they were going for something much, much bigger than that. So the question and the complaints I've heard from people who are on the media side and are a little more friendly to CNN than maybe I am at this point say, look, you know, the bigger thing here is to blow it up in this way. They could have, and this is real, this is a legitimate thing. They could have very easily taken Discovery Plus, put CNN Plus under the banner and say, look, we didn't really think it was a good idea to have a separate streaming service. We've been combining all of our services already. You know, like Discovery had like a golf and a food streaming network that they didn't think were successful. I think a car one as well. They didn't like it. They didn't think that those worked. So they thought, well, let's put everything under the Discovery Plus sort of, overarching umbrella of CNN Plus, of Discovery Plus. You can combine HBO in there. You can maybe throw CNN in there. And then, you know, you can very easily say, you know, eventually Brian Stelter's show gets canceled in a couple months and, you know, you kind of get rid of the bigger personalities. Maybe Chris Wallace comes over and does guest appearances on CNN and only does a weekly show. And you sort of fade it away easily to protect the brand, right? There is a legitimate path Discovery could have taken and done it that way. Essentially lie to you, right? Tell you, hey, it's great programming. We're going to make it part of the Discovery Plus because we have too many streaming, you know, competitive streaming products. But we'll put all these shows under the Discovery Plus umbrella, and you can watch them over there. It's going to be great. And then over time, you kind of just fade it away. Could have easily done that. I don't know what Discovery Plus is going to do with CNN. I don't know what Discovery is thinking for the future of this network. But I will say this. The way they did it acts as if they could be onto something here. And I mean this sincerely. CNN has a long-standing brand, you know, this is CNN. It's got that, you know, people used to say, turn on CNN. When a big event happens, that's what people did. They turned on CNN. Before Fox News, that's what you did, right? Fox News has come along and taken some of that away, and they've burned their credibility so many times over that that's not how people think about it anymore. But that's still in the back of people's heads. It still exists. And if there's the idea from Discovery Plus, and there have been some indications on this front, if the idea is, look, let's make this back into something that people trust again. Let's make it into something. Let's change what they're doing, and we're going to try to make this into a news network again. We're never going to be happy with the news, probably, that they put out. It's going to be probably left-leaning, but back more toward what it was back in the day when people tuned to CNN to actually hear news. Even if it was kind of left-leaning news, at least it was something you could kind of trust when you understood the perspective. Well, doing it this way, in such a public and just absolutely embarrassing fashion, to take CNN 3 weeks into CNN Plus and say, this was so bad, we can't even let it go for a month. We need it off the air immediately. What that might very well give them the opportunity for is to say, this actually is a fresh start. We looked at what was going on. CNN Plus is what they used to do. That idea of just Trump bashing craziness 24/7, that's what they used to do. We're coming in, we're saying, you know what? We want you to think of that era as a failure. We want that brand, that CNN brand, that new thing they developed since like 2015, 2016, we want you to forget that ever happened. This gives them an opportunity to totally change the narrative if they choose to do so. They could say, you know what? Yeah, that old thing was bad. We agree. Here's the new thing that we're trying to do. Now, I don't know that I have much faith in them doing that, honestly, at this point. I haven't seen the ability of CNN to do this. But frankly, it is new leadership. It's a whole new company in control. And maybe there is that chance that they could come in and say, look, all these people, they're all gone. They're all gone. All the problem people, gone. We're starting with new people. Here they are. And introduce new people with a new philosophy. And when you're given the opportunity, say, look, CNN Plus was a perfect example of what went wrong at CNN. They thought people were going to be dedicated to come watch, you know, book clubs and parenting tips and you know, interviews with William Shatner and also Eva Longoria. Well, the hell was that? Eva Longoria is an actress. She doesn't even seem to act anymore. Why would we want to go see shows by Eva Longoria? No one cares. All of this crazy stuff that's just people who are just bashing the right all the time. That's the old CNN. There was an era there. It's long past. We're the new boys in town. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you some freaking news. Whether they do that or not, I mean, I'm highly skeptical, but it does. The public humiliation aspect of this lends itself to an actual change in philosophy. All it does is give them the opportunity to do it. Doesn't mean they're going to do it, but they do have the opportunity now. They could say, That era sucked. We agree. Here's the new era. It's kind of like the old school one. We want to go back to something credible, and we'll see if that actually happens. Joe Rogan, I mean, there's a little bit of celebrating the demise of CNN Plus. I don't know if you detected that at all on this program. If you have, I'm very sorry about that. Not at all my intention. Joe Rogan, you know, again, he's kind of seen as the new voice, right? A different way of doing things from the old school. So no real surprise that Joe Rogan had some had a pretty amazing take on this and looked at CNN Plus as the complete and utter catastrophe that it was.
We're speaking on this day where CNN...
Yeah, CNN
minus,
Plus just, went under. Just, oh, just CNN Minus.
CNN just went under.
They spent $300 million. They got 10,000 subscribers. Imagine the hubris of thinking that something that people don't want for free, that you're going to charge money for it. We're going to have the Jake Tapper book club. Jake Tapper seems like a great guy. But, I mean, I feel like I don't have to pay for his book club.
Oh, yeah, it does kind of seem that way. That's Douglas Murray, by the way, with Joe Rogan. I think he's coming up on the show here in the next couple of weeks. Here they are again, also talking about, I mean, this one really doesn't have much news value. It's just they're just making fun of Brian Stelter, and it was funny.
One of my rules, try and never be mean about people because of their appearances. But a friend of mine said to me the other day, do you know how old Brian Stelter is? And I said, I don't know, 56 or something. He said, look it up on your phone. He's like 34 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, something nuts.
I couldn't stop laughing for the rest of the evening. I just couldn't stop laughing. I don't know what... everything about the guy is strange. Everything about
very him. Strange. His pattern of communication is so strange. It's like, do you listen to other people?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
talk very differently than you.
Yes, he has that.
Yeah. And also, Crystal Ball from Breaking Points was making fun of him the other day. She's like, why does he sit like this? Because you ever notice, he sits like this. Douglas Murray has a book out. It's called The War on the West, and it's terrible. The War on the West, is that really what's going on? One of my favorite moments was him with Barry Weiss, where Barry Weiss, and he, how has the world gone crazy?
Oh, yes.
And
yeah.
she just rattles
she was really
off
good,
one
yeah.
After another.
That's right.
Yeah, when you say silence is violence, when actual violence is violence, the world has gone crazy.
Yes, the world has gone crazy, and that is absolutely true. We saw this with the Libs of TikTok story we covered a bunch last week. You know, Taylor Lorenz is with the Washington Post, and the whole theme today has been the liberal media collapse, and all this falls into an area that allows people to cheer on Elon Musk for buying Twitter. You know, it's not always been the case that people cheer on billionaires for buying media properties, but... You know, this is the environment, the climate that has been created by the media being so terrible that people are like, please just get, let's just have some billionaire come in here and buy this thing so it's not so awful anymore. That is kind of where we are. Taylor Lorenz went on Twitter, and of course she's been covering all these social media networks for a long time. It's kind of been her beat, and she decided to out the Libs of TikTok owner. The person who ran this particular account, out them by name, link to her address, all these terrible things, because she was just so awful and a terrible, terrible person. Here is the clip of her now, after all of this went down, talking and trying to justify her ridiculous actions.
It's rare to see an account gain so much prominence so quickly and be shaping these narratives in such an effective way, especially against trans people.
So
I was, my story was kind of long, but I really wanted to make the case like why this account mattered. And I think it's incredibly important, you know, as someone that covers the influencer industry, to know who is exerting influence in this way. I mean, for all we knew, this could have been a foreign actor, right? Or someone we just didn't know. And so I thought, hey, look, this account has massive power, massive influence. This woman is basically on an entire right-wing media tour. She gave interviews to the New York Post, Tucker, all of that, and registered as a media company, registered a trademark. So, yeah, I thought it was quite important and in the public interest to find out who was running it.
You know, the point she makes there, hey, this could have been a foreign influencer, is an interesting one at some level. I guess it could have been, right? I don't know why a foreign influencer would have an account like this that just highlights TikToks, but it's possible that could have been true. Also, it's possible when you started doing the reporting on the issue and realized it wasn't the case that you just filed the story in your circular file next to your desk. Why are you writing the story after you figured out that wasn't true? And I find it very interesting that the excuse for outing the libs of TikTok account is that it could have been foreign influence. Of course, it was also the excuse as to why they couldn't cover the Hunter Biden laptop, because that could have been foreign influence. They seem to use this excuse whenever it's really convenient to do so. You know, and all of this could have been done without outing the person. You know, she was like, oh, well, she did a right-wing media tour. Yeah, how? As a person without a name, as a person on the phone on Tucker Carlson, not with their name being publicized, and you knew that. You did it intentionally because you wanted to extract a price for fighting back against this type of ideology. And, you know, there's this idea that this account is responsible for some sort of bullying. It's just not true. These are publicly posted videos. Anybody could have seen them. That's just how social media works. Anybody could have seen these videos. Anybody could have put them up. And that is what's happened all over the internet. No one seems to care when someone on the right, you know, no one was like, you know, complaining when someone on the right gets their dirty laundry aired. Everyone loves that. It's just when it's someone on the left and they get their dirty laundry aired, everyone's upset about it. This is the sort of environment in the media when an important thing like the media collapses because of just no credibility. This is what allows conspiracy theories to grow. This is what allows the underbelly of people's thoughts to run wild. People have nothing to trust, so they trust nothing. And that is what has given rise to an era where people are begging Elon Musk to take over Twitter just so there can be something sensible done in our public discourse. You know, I don't know that Elon Musk can solve these problems by himself. He can solve a lot. He can go into space, but this is a bigger problem. And so I don't know if he's going to be able to solve this one-on-one. I don't know that he could do this by himself. But I will say, it's a heck of a move in the right direction. And when you see what else is going on in the media, you see why something like this is really needed. One thing you can always say about Biden and the Biden administration is that he has his finger on the pulse of the American people. He doesn't always show a pulse, but he has his finger on someone else's pulse. This is the thing to push for right now. Biden administration is now going to renew a push for COVID-19 funding, which is pretty amazing. He wants an extra $10 billion, at least, maybe even more than that. A fascinating thing, because I don't think that's really on the top of the minds of most people right now. We had that really bad era of talking about that all the time. We came out of that era, and then you asked for $1.9 trillion to spend on COVID. And everyone was like, this seems ill-advised right now. And then you got it, and then we had all this inflation, and now you want more money? It doesn't seem to be, look, he's really not connected with anybody right now. I mean, that's the Joe Biden way. Biden, his approval rating is now at 41% among young voters. That's not what's supposed to happen with Democrats, guys. He's supposed to be super duper popular with the young kids. And it's weird when you run an 80-year-old how sometimes every once in a while it doesn't connect all that well with younger people. I think, too, they see this, and the main reason there is not a good one, by the way. They're just mad at him for, like, they have to keep paying the debt that they accrued because of college, which is like that. Joe Biden didn't make you take on that debt, just so you know. That's really more on you than it is on him. But he didn't get rid of it, which I guess he was supposed to. So there you go. Plus, I do think, though, that there's part of this that people just don't have faith that he's even on top of it. I mean, people are watching the videos of what is happening with him at these speeches and just getting very disturbed. That's why earlier on today we started with the Joe Biden gaffe triangle of emotions, whatever the heck we're calling it, mainly because you get these emotions, this confluence of emotions. Sometimes you're scared, sometimes you're sad, sometimes you're scary. Where does each one of these gaffes plot? And I want to give you another example of this. Here is Joe Biden shaking hands with no one.
America. God bless you all.
Turns around. All right, puts his hand out to shake. There's nobody there. Uh-oh, walking the other way. Help, please someone, can I shake hands with someone? Is anyone just invisible? And maybe I've just not seen them. Let me extend my hand. He walks around, doesn't know which way to go. walks off the stage. Okay, all right, a little very, very strange. And if it happened once, okay, fine. It happened once. Here it is happening again. Turns around, shakes, hands out, nobody there, faces the wrong way, comes back and waves, now turns around, all right, smiles, now walks off the side. Of course, he's walking the wrong way. That's not the way to go. And so the Secret Service walks in and tries to save him. This is not healthy. So where does this land on the Joe Biden gaffe triangle of emotion? Kind of over on the left side there on the front. It's pretty much just funny. I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world. I'm not that sad about it. I'm a little scared that he's seeing invisible people, though, I will say. So it's sort of scary, but very funny. All right, back in a second. So we've been talking a lot about the Twitters today, but Facebook is changing its feed again. And, you know, we've been having record weeks on Facebook. We do appreciate it when you check the show out on Facebook. We're right near 200,000 followers or whatever it is, right near it, like a couple people away. So go there and follow the page so we can get above that number, because round numbers are incredibly important. They change the world. Round numbers, important. Anyway, you can mark Stu as a Studios America as a favorite account. If you do that, you get around a lot of the annoying algorithm problems that pop up on Facebook. Just go there, follow, of course, the program on Facebook, and then like the show and mark us as one of the favorites. It's pretty easy to do. You just click on favorites, and then all you have to do is make sure that you set Stubergear as one of your favorite accounts, and you will get our material all the time, which is pretty great. And don't let big tech kind of take control of all this stuff. You don't have to. By the way, YouTube is available as well. We do appreciate it when you go there and click subscribe or follow or whatever it is. The thing I would highly recommend is if you click the little bell, that will give you alerts on when we go live. I think we might even go live tomorrow. Do a little live thing tomorrow with you during the day, maybe after the radio program. If you have some time to hang out, we'll do a bunch of questions and answers, hit whatever is in the news that day. We have a lot of fun doing it. So join us and click that bell on youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Jack writes, love your show, Stu. Good guests, good host. I mean, I like how he's not overselling it. Not great. You know, it's just you're good on both accounts. Love this stupid show. Always good to see Gregory on the show. His book, Inconvenient Facts, was great. Yeah, we had him on for Earth Day, an Earth Day extravaganza. I scooped dog poo today. The planet does not care, but my 12-foot by 24-foot yard loves me. Well, it's good. It's good to be loved by someone, even if it happens to be grass that had recently been pooped on. Back in a second. Okay, so here's what happened. There is a huge demand for eating meat in this country, in this world. And there's been a disagreement as to how to produce this meat. As you know, a lot of resources, if you're an environmentalist, a lot of resources go into the production of meat. If you think about a cow as essentially a machine to change grass into meat, it's kind of an inefficient process, you know? And that's why scientists have come together and say, hey, you know, what if we just grew the meat like right out of cells or something? We'll take some cells, we'll just grow it in the lab so that people will love this. People love their food coming out of scientific labs. It's very well known that people love this. But I don't know, like, I feel like the thought behind that was eventually that people could have hamburgers or something that was made out of real meat but grown in a lab. Still doesn't sound all that appetizing to me. I doubt it does to you either. But was there really a push and a need for this? Siberian tiger steaks? Leopard steaks? Black panther steaks? Zebra steaks? That is what they're working on right now. As the case for all lab-grown meat alternatives, the process relies on live animals, minimally at least. They select sample tissue from the healthiest wild animals and then turn them into steaks in the lab. Some of the other, they've got currently working on Siberian tiger steaks, leopard steaks, black panther steaks, Bengal tiger steaks, zebra steaks, white lion steaks, and lion steaks. White lion steaks, of course, will be more expensive because it's white meat. That's just the way that works. By the way, Don't forget to get your Hunter Biden laptop case. Yes, you can do that right now. Oh, and we have the CNN Plus gear, the Stu Plus gear as well at StuDoesMerch.com or HunterBidenLaptopCase.com as well. Make sure to get yours before you're banned from all facilities. We'll see you tomorrow.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt. Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.